Welcome, viewers and listeners, to another edition of CHP Talks. I'm here today with an expert on financial matters, and I'm going to introduce you in a minute, Lex, but this is Lex Acker, and thank you for joining us today on CHP Talks.
You're welcome.
So for those who don't know, Lex is a chartered financial analyst. It is something he's been doing since 2017. He has over 10 years of experience going through SEC filings of publicly listed companies. He's worked for hedge funds as a research analyst. He's studied the CFE, Certified Fraud Examiner, the U.S. version, which is a 2,000-plus page curriculum on financial fraud, and he's specialized in financial reporting fraud. What he does extremely well is to review several years of periodic financial statements. He highlights the changes and odd numerical and textual patterns within, and he focuses on changes in financial report notes and text, which provides him with insights into management intentions and attention. And he says the event that woke him up and turned him into a mainstream narrative dissident was his own calculation of excess mortality from Canadian obituaries in October 2021. He's worked closely with nurses in British Columbia. Last year, he was given access to the financial statements of BCNU, the BC Nurses Union, which he analyzed in the same way as he would analyze a publicly listed company. And those are the kinds of things we're going to be talking about today. It's not for the average viewer and listener, that's not an area that they're really comfortable with or know everything about, but we thank you for joining us, Lex, and bringing your expertise to this. And just for the public as well, I'll mention I first met Lex last week on a Zoom call with BC Rising. We're a collection of people from various walks of life who are concerned about the direction of things going in British Columbia. Some of the government overreach, the dictates, mandates, and regulations that have made life in British Columbia kind of uncomfortable for the last few years, and for some, extremely uncomfortable for those who have lost their jobs, their livelihoods. It's been a real time of pressure and change, and so we want to expose some of that. So, Lex, I'll just turn it over to you, and you can open up the discussion on what you learned about the BC Nurses Union and some of the things that have taken place, the loss of nurses in our province. Just give us a background.
Well, thank you, Rod. this is something I've been sitting on for several months. I first got the financial statements of BCNU maybe like 8-9 months ago. And then I started like digging into them, and I wasn't too pleased with what I was seeing. And then recently I review the annual reports of BCNU, which are slightly different than the financial statements. And they contain some data that I analyze, and it supports the conclusions that I posted on Substack to make it known publicly. And so I wrote a post, and it says essentially that, you know, I believe that there's at least like 4,762 nurses that were terminated as a result of the PHO public health order of Bonnie Henry. How should I go about this? So there's, I'm going to start reading from the top of the post. The BCNU, it's in its annual reports, it discloses a distribution of nurses by seniority, by tranches of seniority. So you got like the number of nurses from 0 to 5 years of seniority, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, 15 to 20, 20 to 25, and 25 plus years of seniority. So you have these distributions and in various annual reports, in the 22 annual report of BCNU, then in the 2021 annual report, and then they did the same thing in the 2019 annual report. So by looking at the changes of those numbers, it provides an insight on the age distribution of the nursing workforce.
So just before we go further, the title of your article, which I've read a couple times, it is that at least 4,762, which is 9.7% of the nursing staff.
Of the BCNU membership, because these numbers are derived from the BCNU membership.
They're missing due to the still ongoing COVID-19 vaccine mandate from the BC BC Healthcare, right?
Correct.
So anyway, thank you. And now you're going to talk about some of the specifics in terms of the, like, I know you're going to be bringing out that it's younger nurses that have mostly taken the hit. And I'll let you go on and explain right. that. Just so people know, we're missing almost 10% of the nurses we should have in British Columbia.
Oh, yeah, definitely, at least. I'll bring up a screen share and move through my post and also consult with support material.
Sure. And just for those listening on the podcast, we will be sharing the link to this excellent article by Lex. We'll be sharing the link in our show notes so that you'll be able to read this for yourself if you don't get every detail as we go over it. But there's some fascinating numbers here, fascinating and disturbing numbers.
So I'm going to start off with like just a general assertion that roughly like 20% of the general population doesn't want to have anything to do with vaccine, with COVID-19 vaccine. They don't want to take it. They didn't take it. They're not interested, period. And then you have to wonder, like, you know, why would medical staff, nursing staff be more prone to take it? Because the representations of Minister Adrian Dix, Minister of Health, and Bonnie Henry is that they say, like, well, you know, most healthcare workers took it. Like only like 1-2% sometimes didn't take it in some trenches of healthcare workers and so on. And this, and I believe they are under, they are like misrepresenting the true count of non-compliance.
For those listening on the audio podcast, you don't see the screen share, but the headline, part of his article says, "Real numbers don't lie, but public officials did and still do." So they're this misrepresenting of vaccine uptake is one of the lies being brought out here.
So I'm going to move on with that general vaccination rates for like influenza. Let's talk about influenza vaccination rate. Up until 2012, the general like vaccination rate for influenza among healthcare worker was like no more than 40%, no more. And then what happened around 2012, 2013, the BC government like had an influenza prevention policy that they put in place, and they forced the staff to either vaccinate for influenza or wear a mask. So that's a form of coercion. And what it did is that to avoid the trouble, like, you know, a good chunk of healthcare workers, like they decided to comply with that. And that brought up like immediately the influenza vaccination rate compliance. And I'm going to move to a document here from the BC Center of Disease Control. It's titled Final Report Influenza Vaccine Coverage Staff of Acute Care Facilities, BC 2021-2022. And we're going to move to a chart that shows the yearly participation in influenza vaccination, right? And then we see that, you know, the chart starts in 2010. The rate is in the mid-30s. And then in 2011, 2012, it's just below 40%. And then suddenly when the mask or vaccinate influenza prevention policy came down, then the rate went up to the mid 70%. And then it stayed until like 2018, 2019, 2019, 2020. And then it starts dropping. This is good news, actually, because I don't believe in those products. So for me, it's good news. And we see that in 2021 and then in 2022, the influenza vaccination rate of healthcare workers is plummeting. And that's a response to the COVID vaccine, I believe, because healthcare workers have lost, they've lost faith in those products. They've seen the result of those products. So here in from 2013 and to 2020, we have like what Bonnie Henry would describe in her own papers, because I've read some of our papers, is the habituation of healthcare workers to annual vaccination. Now, if we presume that influenza vaccines are beneficial, that they're a public improvement in public health, then as we see the influenza vaccination rate plummeting, we're seeing a damage to that positive habituation. So basically, like, the public health order of Bonnie Henry, like, it actually like caused the response in the general healthcare worker influenza vaccination rate, and now they're plummeting. And this is important. So let's keep this chart in mind, and it just tells us the picture. Like, there's been a reaction here, and healthcare workers are losing faith. They're losing trust in those products, coinciding with those vaccine mandates. So let's go back to the post, the article. So that's an important point I wanted to drive in. And then, like, in November 1st, 2021, Adrian Dix, he had a press conference, and then he expressed that most healthcare workers are vaccinated for COVID-19, and it's only 1% or 2% in various trenches that are not vaccinated. That's a representation he made. I think it's flat out false. This is false, completely false. I think the vaccination rate is around like 10%. The unvaccination rate for COVID-19 is around 10%. That's what I think it is. We know that the general population, it's 20%, don't want to have to do anything with it. So maybe there's like a 10% of the healthcare workers who did it because they were coerced. And then the other 10, they say like, no, we're not putting up with it. So. And what I did is I went to the annual reports of BCNU 2022, 2021, and 2019. And this is where I extracted the distributions of seniority of the members of BCNU. And then we see those trenches here, 5 years, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, right? And then in 2019, we have like total of like 48,559 nurses that are members of BCNU. And in 2021, it increases to 49,177. So we have like a yearly increase in the nursing supply, which is good. Historically, the nursing supply across BC, it increases at a rate of about 2%. And this is a number I can verify through various sources. Coming 2022, we have a net drop of 5.6% in the nurse membership of BCNU. So what's going on here? So at the end of 2021, in around November, a bunch of nurses were terminated, fired, dismissed for not taking the COVID shots. And now it shows up in 2022. Because BCNU, they account for a member if they've been a paying member in the last 3 months. So the membership counts of 2021 includes terminated nurses because they work most of the year. But in 2022, they dropped out of the count. That's where we see the effect of the PHO, the public health order. Now, what is interesting here is that when I looked at the number, the change over, like the percentage change in the various seniority trenches, I see something obvious is that the nurses, 10 years of less of seniority, these are young nurses. They're like, you know, they finish nursing school in their early 20s. And then within 10 years, that brings them to like mid-30s, early 30s, right? Nurses are predominantly women, right? At least 90%. And we know that women, it's natural, they want to have children in the family. And I believe that's the explanation of the non-compliance of younger nurses. So they're telling us as a group that there's a problem with, there are issues with the with these vaccines. And that's why they didn't complain. They didn't comply with those mandates. Now, what we see here with the older, the veteran nurses, I call them veteran because they've been on the job for much longer, 10 years of plus of seniority. We see that there's a steep increase in 2022. So, for example, like in the tranche of 15 to 20 years of seniority, there's a 36, about 37% increase in that group of nurses and so on. So these are nurses, these counts are affected mostly by return to work, retired nurses that were called back, they came back to work, fill up the missing nurses. So in the younger nurses, you've got like a mass firing of at least 10%. And then in the veteran nurses group, then you have some of them, of course, were fired, but then that was offset by retired nurses coming back to work. And that's why we see this increase in veteran nurses.
Lex,
so
I think
what I did is I aggregated in another chart. What I did is like seeing that there's a clear divide at 10 years of seniority, I created another chart that aggregated the these two seniority cutoff, if you want, the 10-year cutoff. So what we see and how I did come up with the title of the post is that if I aggregate the 10 years or less seniority nurses, I see a drop of like 4,762 nurses, 10 years of seniority that left BCNR. They're no longer members. They're not working anymore. They're not members anymore of BCNU. And I don't think that these young nurses decided to quit their job, go on a vacation. I don't think that they decided to go work at Walmart. I don't think that they decided to get on welfare because it's better. No, they were terminated. They just left early in a career. They were kicked out. In the veteran nurse group, 10 years plus of seniority, I see a net change, net increase of 2,031 nurses coming in. So the net decrease is 5.6% across the province, all age group, all seniority groups, but there's a minus 9.7% in young nurses.
And Lex, I know you're going to get to this later, but I just wanted to bring it in at this point, mention that there is an incentive for nurses to return from retirement to come back into the workforce because the government was doling out additional money for them. Like there was a kind of an enticement. And they also, you're probably going to mention this later, but I'll just bring it in now. They also went on a poaching expedition across the country, enticing nurses to come to British Columbia for a higher rate of pay. And that amounted to a significant, you said, $300 to $400 million additional money shelled out by the BC government to cover this loss of nurses, right?
And this is when I get into like the quantification of economic damages. And this is one of the motivations why Adrian Dix and Bonnie Henry are understating the termination of healthcare workers is like it greatly reduces the prospect of a class action lawsuit. If you have like, you know, if in appearance you have like fewer plaintiffs, then maybe it's not worth it. And I'm saying like, no, it's about like 10% were fired. So there's tons of plaintiffs out there. So the public's been deceived there on that issue. So what I want to go is like another kind of damage here is that the public health order caused an aging of the nursing workforce. So before, if we look at the numbers here, in the class of 10 years of seniority or less, we look at 2019, and we've got like 31,000 nurses. Then in 2021, it increases to 34. So it's increasing. And then we see that the 10-year plus of seniority, the veteran nurses, like from 2019 to 2021, it's decreasing. They're retiring. They're older nurses. It's just normal, right? But then we see in 2022, there's enough. So then, like, you know, from 2021, older nurses, veteran nurses, they're growing in proportion to the membership base. And then younger nurses are decreasing. So this is a reversal of the demographics of the nursing supply. This is not good for a pension fund. It's really not good. And then I've calculated some percentages, right? So in 2019, younger nurses, they were like 64-65% of the nursing supply. And then older nurses, veteran nurses, they were 35%, right? And then like veteran nurses, 2021, they're decreasing in proportion, 30%. Younger nurses, 69%. So up until 2021, we see that the nursing supply is getting younger and younger, which is good. And then in 2022, we see the reversal. It's clear. It's like younger nurses, they drop to 63% from 69. Veteran nurses, they increase to 36-37% from 30%. So that's damage to the workforce.
As of today, BC has not relaxed these regulations or restrictions at all, the vaccine mandate.
That is correct. I think as early, I think in April 2023, Bonnie Henry, she reiterated her order, and it has no expiry. I think I have it in the tab somewhere.
So are there any other provinces that have not called their nurses back to work?
No, I don't think so. I think every other province, they've allowed their unvaccinated workers to go back to work. And this is across the world, actually. BC, British Columbia is a holdout. Okay. It's very an extreme behavior compared to their to other jurisdictions. It's the only place that I know of that still has that. What I can do is I can move on to the geography of the impact of the public health order. So in the annual reports of BCNU, they have like 16 regions, and they have also the membership numbers per region and the number of stewards per region and the number of work sites. And when I look into these numbers, then we can get some insights into what's going on here. So this is a chart, this is a map of the 16 regions that BCNU use to, you know, manage their activities. And what I did is I just wrote down like the changes in nurse membership per region between, and this is 2022 compared with 2019, because I don't have regional numbers from 2021. So I compared from 2019. So imagine that, you know, in 2019 up until 2021, the nursing supply is increasing, then it downticks in 2022. So these numbers that you're seeing, they're actually understatements, right? So they're from the membership level of 2019, which is lower than the membership level of 2021. So we see, like, you know, region 15, there's a big minus 18%. That's the Northwest Coast.
And that's the region I live in. So
that's the region.
In this region, 18.4% fewer nurses
yes.
than we did in 2019.
Yeah, and then like you know the upper Northeast like minus 8.9%, and then region 12, they call it the Thompson North Okanagan minus 16%, and so on, and this is all across the province, right? There's only like three regions that didn't have like a negative drop from the PHO. Let's get to the table. So this chart, the numbers are in the table below. So that's the effect of Bonnie Henry's public health order on the nurse supply per BC, per regions of BC, right? I mean, there's only like Simon Fraser and Pacific Rim, 0%, no change. Everything else, the rest of the province is decimated. This is another damage caused by the public health order of Bonnie Henry.
You pointed out in the paper that some of these nurses that came from other provinces that were attracted in Adrian Dix and Bonnie Henry's desperate attempt to make it look not so bad and paying extra money to bring them in. They were willing to come to BC, but they weren't all willing to go to the rural districts. And
Exactly. So these
if
back to work nurses,
yeah.
these veteran nurses that came back to work, they're not coming back like into the Thompson Okanagan or into like northern BC. No, they're coming back in the Simon Fraser region. We've got 13 regions out of 16 that have like fewer nurses than in 2019. So that these are the main conclusion of the regional damage of the public health order. And now like I'm going to move on to the damage it did to the union. BCNU. BCNU has been damaged by the public health order, big time. So BCNU, they have like something called stewards, right? I think these are members that work for the employer, but they're kind of like you know the connection between the members and the union. So I have no experience with unions, but I suppose that when you're a union worker, if you have an issue with your employer, you go see a colleague who's a steward, and then the colleague will bring up the issue to the union.
That's exactly right, Lex. I was when I worked in the lumber industry, I was a steward for the workers, and if there was a problem, we would represent the steward would represent a worker to the company, and
Exactly. So
it's
the
an
steward
important thing.
represent it represents the issue that the worker has, brings it up to the union, and then the union deals with the employer. Because when you're a unionized worker, you have given up your bargaining power to the union, right? So, and at the end of this presentation, and one conclusion is that nurses, they need to get out of BCNU. They need to like initiate partial decertification of BCNU. They need to regain their individual bargaining power because right now their bargaining power is being misused by BCNU. They're not being fairly represented, and we can see it by the drop in stewards per region. It's right there in front of you. You've got a total loss. Like 35% of the stewards are gone between 2019 and 2022. They're gone, right? So in 2019, we had on average one steward per work site, on average. Now in 2022, we have like 0.68 stewards per work site.
Wow.
So the capacity of BCNU to represent their members is not there. Right? Now, so this is the damage that the public health order add on BCNU. It crippled it. It crippled, it broke the backbone of BCNU. BCNU wrote an article that they said, like, our stewards are our backbone. Well, your backbone is broken.
BCNU and many other unions failed to represent the workers who didn't want to comply with this mandatory vaccination, right? And it's shocking to me how many union leaders cooperated with government mandates when their mandate as a union, their trust is that they will represent their workers who have legitimate complaints with a policy, right? So, but in this case, BCNU did not stand up for their
Well,
workers.
I sampled some previous articles like written by the CNU, and we have them here right now. Historically, we have like some headlines here. In 2014, BCNU says, like, BCNU believes that nurses and other healthcare workers should have the right to decide whether to be vaccinated against influenza based on their understanding of the current evidence and in discussion with their own family's physician. So that was a position of BCNU in 2014. In 2016, BCNU says, like, BCNU advising members to comply with coercive seasonal flu shot. So, I mean, there is the coercion of the influenza prevention policy. And back then, BCNU was doing what it was supposed to do. It was representing its member against that coercion. And it, in the end, like, it worked, actually. They, in 2019, in December 2019, after 4 years, BCNU won what they call like an IWAD, an industry-wide arbitration dispute resolution or something like that. This is when a union will lump in like hundreds of grievances. Instead of ending grievances like one by one, they just lump them all together, and then they appoint an arbitrator to rule on the issue. So up until like 2019, just before the pandemic, BCNU was doing what it was supposed to do for the member, but that's no longer the case. In 2018, this is a great one. Is like, what does it say here? Let's bring it up. BC Health authorities continue non-science-based vaccine or mask flu policy. That's BCNU. They're saying like, hey, there's no basis for that, right? And we know it. So yeah. The change of position with respect to COVID-19 vaccination, no, it says something about BCNU. It turned its back on its member.
The one thing I'd really like to hear you mention specifically is the money that's flowing from the BC government to the nurses union, and you point out contrary to law. Can you go over that a little bit?
Yeah. Okay.
And that may be one of the reasons why the BCNU is taking the position it is now regarding mandatory vaccinations. There may be somewhat influence. They say follow the money. There's some money flowing there, and there may be some influence on BCNU approach to things like vaccination.
Yeah. So Section 6 of the BC Labor Relations Code, the Labor Code, here we are. We have it. Unfair labor practices. An employer or person acting on behalf of an employer must not participate or interfere with the formation, selection, or administration of a trade union or contribute financial or other support to it. Right. No money should be flowing from the employer to the union. All right. I said at the top of this article that my estimate is that, you know, at least like 9.7% of nurses were fired. And that's one inference coming from the annual reports. Well, I've been able to derive that number from the financials statements of BCN, and I'm going to get there. So I'm still showing my post here, and I'm going to highlight a sentence. For example, in 2022 and 2021, 39.19 million and 32.02 million was contributed from the BC government to BCNU's retiree benefit fund. Now, this is a big one. Way, way back around 2008, the BC government started contributing 1% of the aggregate wages of the nurses to a fund called the Retiree Benefit Fund. That fund is managed and administered by BCNU. So it shows up on the balance sheet of BCNU. Let me open this up. I'll open up.
Yeah.
So we're looking at the balance sheet of BCNU in 2022, right? So we can look at total assets here. Like there's 573 million in there. That's a lot of money. That is a lot of money. Here we have two numbers. There are like something called like externally restricted assets. Some of it is in cash, some of it is in investment. Total of it is around like 424 million. This is the accumulation. It's mostly the accumulation of the retiree benefit fund, which is 1% of nurses' wages contributed a year since 2008. Most of it here, we have a breakdown of that 46.2. Most of it is contributed to something called the Retiree Benefit Fund, Retiree Benefit Plan Fund, RBP Fund, 35 million. This represents 1% of the aggregate wages of the province. It represents 1%. So you can estimate that the aggregate payroll of the nurses across the province is about like 3.5 billion. That's what it is. That's the size of it. And if you look at the difference, you've got like 35.2 and then 32 million in 2021. That's an increase of about like 10% per year in aggregate wages. Now we know that historically, the nursing supply grows at a rate of about 2%. We know that the pay increase is about 2%. So you can compound that and say like ballpark 4%. So in normal times, that should increase by 4%, not by 10%, right? So why is it that year over year we have an increase of 10% in aggregate wages? To me, the answer is simple, is that nurses are working overtime. They're working overtime to fill up missing staff. This is where I make a loose inference that the yearly effect of the termination of the nurses, this 10% of nurses that's missing from the supply, that's being compensated with the remaining nurses who are working overtime, and overtime pays more. And that's why we have like an increase of 10% in the aggregate payroll instead of an increase of say 4%, which would make more sense.
I mean, basically what you're telling the people, and I'll give you the last word here to tie it up, but it looks like what we're telling people is that we have fewer nurses by a long shot.
Yep.
We have fewer nurses than, or there's more nurses fired than the government has admitted.
Yes.
We're paying more for the service that we get.
Yes.
We have a large public sector union that is dysfunctional because it is not representing its members on important matters.
It's crippled.
We have a loss of healthcare services that we need we have a growing population and a reduced number of medical health professionals. And we have a government that is lying to us about all this stuff. So that's sort of what I'm getting out of the whole thing. But let you have the final word and tie it in a nice knot.
Recently my attention was brought to a development in the recent collective agreement that was hammered in early this year between BCNU and the government. And I brought it up on the screen share. The government is going to drop a one-time payment of 100 million into BCNU. It's 100 million. One lump sum is coming into BCNU. 2016, they are at 64.4 million. And then in 2022, they're at 114. When I look at this, for a nonprofit, you call this like net assets, which is like total assets minus liability. You call it net asset. If this would be a for-profit operation or company, you would call it equity. It's the same economic quantity. We clearly see that the equity or the net assets of BCNU is steadily increasing. So this organization, to me, looks like a for-profit organization, right? Now, this year at a convention, at a nurse convention, there's a nurse who brought a motion in front of 500 members, a motion to call for a forensic audit of BCNU. And BCNU was quick. They had like a bunch of people lined up to dismiss it, to vote it down. And it was reported to me, I wasn't there, I'm not a nurse. It was reported to me that one objection in front of 500 members is like someone said, if we proceed with a forensic audit of BCNU, we could lose our tax exempt status. Oh, to me, that sounds like an admission. Now, I know you're running out of time, but since I have the financial statement open, we're going to look at the top of it, which is the auditor's report. Right? This is important. So the books, the financial reports, financial statements of BCNU are audited by KPMG. It's one of the big four accounting firms in the world. And they have an audit opinion on those financial statements. And about audit opinions, you can have like three, like there's generally like three kinds of audit opinion. So you have a non-qualified audit opinion, which means that the auditor is of the opinion that the financial statements are fair, they represent the economics of the organization, and that someone can rely on those financial statements to make decisions. And then you can have a qualified audit opinion. Well, a qualified audit opinion is that the auditor is saying like, well, most of the statements are fair, they represent fairly all material aspects of the organization, except a few areas where we have like some concern. A qualified audit opinion is a big deal. It's a big deal. If this was a publicly listed company and this would come out, the stock would crash. This qualified opinion has been emitted by KPMG for the last 5 years at least, because every single financial statement of BCNU has the same qualified opinion. And I call it like a severely qualified opinion, because they say like they're unable to determine if account receivable, current assets, and unrestricted net assets require any adjustments. These are big accounts. Under current assets, you have the accounting of the retiree benefit fund, which is like 400 million plus. So then like, you know, you're wondering like, well, is KPMG capable of verifying the retiree benefit fund, which is public money? And this is why we have a connection with the BC Financial Administration Act, because BCNU appears to be entrusted with public funds. And then the auditor is saying like, we're not able to verify if the numbers require any adjustments. So, I think this is a big problem. There's more I can say about this. And then another kind of opinion that an auditor can have, they can say like, well, we emit like an adverse opinion. It means like the statements are not reliable. Well, given that that a good chunk of the balance sheet of BCNU, the auditor is not able to say that whether it requires any adjustments or not. I think this opinion should be different than what is stated here. But I'm not an accountant. I'm a financial analyst. So I'm a user of financial statement. Accountants, their job is to create those financial statements. And then I'm just a power user of financial statements. I make my analysis. I compare with other things and the opinion than you have it today. So this is important. And given that, the government just agreed to give an extra 100 million, a one-time payment to BCNU. This is something I was just like showing. So what are they doing here is beyond me. I have some ideas, but we're running out of time. So maybe we can have like a second part, a third part, a fourth part to this.
Sure. I think the audience will have their, a while absorbing all of this information.
Yes.
And we will have your article that kind of lays quite a bit of this out. We'll have that, a link to that in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly there's a way people can contact you to if they want to discuss further or
if they want to find me, they can Google my name, Lex Acker, LexAcker. They will find my LinkedIn profile and there's my email on it. Email is like acker.lex@gmail.com, acker.lex@gmail.com.
Wonderful.
And then if they know anything about this, they have something to add, great, I want to listen. There's much more to this story. And I've been sitting on it for about 9 months.
Okay.
It was hard for me to come out publicly. I was supposed to come out publicly at the National Citizens Inquiry. And then for some reason, I didn't get to testify, but I was there. I was slated to testify.
Okay.
And then something else happened. I had to go away. So here we have. There it is.
Very
missing
well.
Nurses.
Yeah.
And let's see where that goes.
It's one of the many ways in which the citizens of British Columbia and Canada, of course, have been damaged by government policies regarding the COVID vaccination mandates, the restrictions. And we've been damaged financially, economically. We've been damaged.
There's a lot. There's damage to the healthcare system. We've got like a large number of missing nurses and also a large number of other healthcare workers. We have a crippled union. They lost like 35% of their stewards. So that is damage to the union. We have a loss of public confidence and public trust in the medical system.
Yes.
We just see it with the nurses who are healthcare workers, like they're taking fewer and fewer influenza vaccine. I think it's a good thing, but it's also showing a loss of public confidence.
Right.
There are like remedies to this. I think I talked too much. Like we have to wrap up this call, but all the best to everybody.
Well, thank you very much for being with us today, and
yep.
I'm sure that there's going to be some questions arise, but thanks. We appreciate you bringing this information out so that exposing it to the light and so that we can understand what's been going on behind closed doors.
Light is the best disinfectant.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Lex Acker, financial analyst, for sharing your thoughts with us.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.